CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, you already know it's the show No Borders every Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. on CliffCentral.com. And yes, Alistair, that was Tuku on a house beat.
Yes, it was Tuku on a house beat.
Courtesy of DJ Stubble,
who's coming through later on.
Yeah, you already know.
Very excited. Very big Friday today in the country.
You have no idea.
For those of you who are not within our borders.
It started at midnight.
It did.
My sister had me up all night like, no, let's watch. We are waiting for him.
And he took them.
He took them. So let's get into it real quickly before we even introduce our guests. One of our guests is going to speak about it, though. So Shukri, you had something to say about the reshuffle.
Yeah, man, thanks for being here. I just thought, I think there's so much going on. Every day we're shuffling, but not quite like we're shuffling today,
He came prepared.
He's like, I'm shuffling.
Oh, come on.
Things are moving, so yeah.
Okay, I'm always trying to get into people's heads that I study political science. It's one of the worst degrees ever, but from another political analyst, what's your view of, the whole situation, governmentally and party-wise?
I think, there's an opportunity for the ANC to self-correct itself and to, for people within the cabinet and within the NEC to step up and create and say, not in our name. But I think that, the kind of political forces are strong. Maybe they think politically they need to sit it out until the elective conference and then they'll be able to, take control of the top six and then recall him. So, I think we're not in that position. I think we feel very helpless as people, and there are only two ways that he can, be removed as president, and it's very hard for us as ordinary citizens in the current sort of elective system to do anything.
But it is his prerogative as the president to reshuffle his cabinet.
Yeah, definitely.
That's his team. From a political standpoint, right? If you can't rely on your team, you're going to change your team.
You have to change.
If your team betrays you got to have people who are going to stand by you through thick or thin. And if you can't trust the people next to you, I don't think even he can. His mandate would not be able to pull through if he doesn't have the right people around him.
And he only made this decision based on a forensic report that was done by intelligence.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day,
they keep saying alleged and dubious.
You forget nothing to do with intelligence can be dubious when it comes to Jacob Zuma, because Jacob Zuma is dubious. He is intelligence. That's why you can't get rid of him. You've been trying for years. No, he had sex in the shower. Nothing. You can't stick anything to this man. I'm actually happy Jacob is doing what he's doing.
I can't really comment in terms of either being happy or sad, but I will say that he's a very strong individual and he does whatever he wants.
Which is happiness.
No, you're right. He is well within his powers.
Yeah.
Is he serving a small interest at the expense of the rest of the country?
Oh, yes.
That is a different conversation.
Is he the only president in the world or politician to do it? No.
Is Pravin Gordhan the only person in the country who can run the Minister of Finance?
No.
So he's well within his powers, and I think that people need to realize that, people are saying, why can't we recall him if other people can be impeached? And they don't understand the legalities around it. You're right.
Yeah.
He's well within his mandate to do that.
Yeah.
But I think he's putting his own whims and fancies ahead of the
interests of the nation.
It's funny you say that because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who's a former SRC president, and he was saying he's a staunch Zuma supporter, and he said exactly what you just said now. Like, look, I mean, at the end of the day, it's constitutional what he has done. Number two, at the end of the day, we all understand that this is part of the entire state capture that we're the problem that people are having right now. And yes, unfortunately, it's Gupta driven.
I think looking at it from a continental point of view, I think first and foremost, South Africa is definitely the most democratic nation on the continent, right?
Yep.
They call your constitution a living constitution.
A living constitution,
It's the most democratic constitution in the world, actually.
Yeah.
And it is good for people to continuously check the powers and balance out the powers of their leaders.
Yeah.
I do think sometimes it stifles progress.
Okay.
Continue to do it, but it shouldn't be to the extent where, okay, fine, let's demonstrate, let's protest, but you can't stop parliamentary sessions, because parliamentary sessions aren't about an individual.
No, they're not.
Their state of nation address. That was ridiculous. Let the man say what he wants to say, then leave and say, okay, well, everything he said was nonsense. But let him say what he needs to say. Protest and demonstrations are very necessary in any democracy. However, let there be some sort of dialogue or some sort of professionalism to it,
I think you're going in the totally right direction. I mean, like, it's just unfortunate that the one thing that actually the whole world applauds Africa for is the one thing that's killing them at the same time. Without being radical, I would honestly say at a time like this, this is the time you go and slap the president in public. No, honestly, because now you're really expressing how you feel. Because at the end of the day, as far as it may be constitutional, it may be right in every, like, you know, method or fashion, but the truth of the matter is that the people that are going to suffer on the ground. And those people have nothing to do with the Gupta or an ANC or anything else.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
So, I mean, my final comment for being a political expert on the show, thank you very much for the opportunity.
You have no right. You have no right to call yourself an expert.
I say that tongue in cheek. But is the fact that, you know, the greatest check and balance is that he cannot stand for a third term, you know?
Yes,
and
I think, exactly.
And that's the difference when you talk about other sort of, you know, I'm not going to only say African countries, but, you know, other, you know, and that's where we're saying that we have, you know, another 2 years, and that's when you can step out, and then we can kind of re-engineer ourselves.
Yes,
and so
exactly.
At the end of the day, what he does within that power, we have the power to vote, and that's it.
And that's it.
And then you've got to live with that.
But guys, you're forgetting about the level of damage here. All I'm saying is that as much as you can be looking forward to a 2018 opportunity to then bring someone else in, what about what he's going to be able to... This guy's on fire.
Rape and pillage.
This is exactly... He's like...
Okay, extremists.
It's like watching Vikings. It's like watching Vikings.
I'm going to use that word that I hate using, and you guys are being radical. It is funny. I believe in radicalism. I'm sorry. Because it depends what you mean by radicalism.
Yeah.
Radicalism isn't going out and killing people feel you have differences. Radicalism is saying... When the West came here to take the land, that was radical. When we want to take it back, we're being radical and we can't do it.
Yeah,
like, I mean, saying that, okay, redistribution of land, redistribution of resources, state resources becomes radical. How is Julius Malema radical for saying, okay, these things are ours. Can we get them back, please?
Okay, well,
can I get my water, please? Don't be a radical. Let's share it.
No, I agree with you. And I think that's a separate discussion altogether.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is that...
Yeah.
Everyone says that we all have our number, right?
Yep.
Is it 600 million? What's your number? What's your number?
Yeah.
60
yeah.
million?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about big numbers
here.
You know, great men have been corrupted for less.
I swear.
I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Like a beautiful woman. Like, you know, there are many things, you know? So.
Like a Hyundai. But anyway, guys, okay, I'm looking at the clock. So we have two very amazing guests on the show today in the studio. We have Michaela, who is the communications manager for
Marketing and communications manager,
Thank you for correcting me. Of Fort Network and the CEO, Shukri. Guys, do you want to reintroduce yourselves and tell us all about Fort Network?
So, yeah, thanks for having us. And besides being, moonlighting as political experts, we are an agency of thinkers, makers, and creators, and we're a kind of creative agency network with offices in Johannesburg and Kenya, and soon to be Lagos as well. And at our core, really, is we're not a traditional agency. We produce amazing content for any platform, whether it's branded content or entertainment, and really sort of sit at the intersection of all of those different spaces.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's essentially what we do, and that's our day job.
Okay, Michaela.
Yeah, so we recently launched a campaign. It's called Create Movement. And what it does is we've kind of said that we want to kind of bring attention to and start the conversation around the decolonizing of Africa's creative economy.
See, that's, yes, exactly. And I was reading that. I'm like, okay, let me try and be smart and try to figure out what this means. I couldn't. So, I mean, the first question is, okay, decolonizing the creative content of Africa. Let's get into that.
Isn't that radical in itself?
It sounds radical, right? Let's get into that. I mean, that's a very over-the-top kind of statement.
See, I think that it is a loaded word, but I don't think that it's over the top.
Okay.
Because when you think about
I like
about
being
it,
over the top in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. the excess hyperbole, right?
Yeah.
When you really get into it, and what we've laid out is some practical ways that people can engage with it, because there's no use we moan about it when we don't say how are we setting the example to be able to do that. Essentially, what we're saying is that we need to tell our story from an Afro-positive and centric perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying is that when you look at companies within the creative economy, music companies, advertising, media companies, they are largely foreign-owned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Number one.
True.
Number two, besides ownership, because it's not only about ownership, they are often dictate the narrative of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people don't understand that what we have, and this was inspired by the fact that we started our business 10 years ago when we were broke ass students at UCT, and we need to pay back our student loans. And so we didn't go down and start breaking things. We said we were going to become entrepreneurial activists. And this idea of decolonizing Africa, Kwame Nkrumah, Julius Nyerere, were like my heroes. And and then when I look around within the advertising and media industry, and we revere Publicis and Saatchi and Ogilvy, these are colonial relics.
And the government needs to change. The government always talks, recently has been talking about transformation within the media industry.
And rapid transformation at that.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's not happening. I was at the King James Group, and you can still tell that half the meetings that I'd attend would be six white people, and I'm the black person there. I'm the only black person. And you're kind of like, is this my time to talk?
I don't know. You're there for the coloring.
That's it. Well, yeah.
And then you take it a step further, because it really is not only about the people who are, you know, around that. So a big part of what we want to think about is to say that if we, our kind of line is that we were, our company was, and our pitches were crafted on streets and rehearsed on the trains, because we didn't even have a car. We would take the train to our first pitches, right? And now, 10 years later, we employ 50 people and we're becoming this independent network. But so what if we don't drive a greater narrative? And we're saying that we donated 10% of our company to our staff, we donated a percentage of our company to our sustainability arm, because we need to create a new ownership model around our creative economy, and we need to create a consciousness around that. And so it's something that we're really passionate about. You can be African and world class.
Yeah, exactly. I like that statement. Yeah.
So I mean, so that's essentially what we did, and we wanted to, you know, rally and get people from, you know, all different. When we talk about the creative economy, we talk about entertainment, music, advertising, communication. Whether you're an artist, we need to rally together and say, how do we create a platform that's truly Afrocentric? You know, and so
from a media perspective, of course.
From a media perspective, but also internally, because I think that if we think that we don't, as a creative economy, have a role to play, and we were talking about politics, if we don't think we have a role to play to teach the mining industry, for example, if you make your employees shareholders in your company,
you're going to work harder.
They won't break your stuff. Can I say S-H-I-T?
You can.
They won't have a better understanding of these things.
I always talk about that when I'm at Checkers or ShopRite, and you know, I'm at the till, and this lady's like, click, click, plastic. If that woman had shares in the company and knew that she was adding value to the organization to get more money out of it. She would work way hard. She's like, hey, the more clients I serve, the more money the company makes, and the more money the company makes, the more money I make.
She'll give you a kiss on the forehead as soon as you get the time.
How are you doing? Yeah.
And I think that Create Movement really, it fosters this like a pride in and like an ownership of the creative economy with how we're pioneering almost this shift in the ownership model.
Yes.
Is that there's a shift in your mindset and how you work and taking control of that narrative as being proudly African. And like Shakri said, I mean, we don't have a lack of skills and resources and the quality in Africa. We just haven't taken it to the world, but we can.
Let me question you on that, Michaela. I want to look at the creative content. We were talking about decolonizing the creative content of Africa. What about the creative content itself? Do you not think that because it hasn't been decolonized, it is sort of still substandard?
I mean, so here's the thing, right? In terms of the different levels of how we need to approach this, I think we're still in the awareness phase. Okay. People are not aware of this. They say, hey, I'm a marketing manager. I'm in charge of this marketing budget of, let's say, 100 million.
Yeah.
Do you know that the money you spend goes offshore? I didn't even know, let alone is it substandard. Now, to me, I don't think it's substandard. I think that what we produce here is not in line with who we truly are and doesn't in line with our values. I think that we have an opportunity through disruption, technology, digitization, whatever you want, buzzword you want to call it, to start driving our own narrative. And I think that it's the start of that process. And you'd be surprised when we chat to people. People are unaware of these things.
So maybe in a more layman terms, it's what we're driving or what we're producing isn't ours, which is why it's substandard. But if it becomes something that, you know, if you're driving your own,
But if you look at Nigeria, if you look at Nigeria, if you look at advertising like in Nigeria from that perspective, if you watch a Nigerian advert, you feel like you're in Africa. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Because it speaks directly to you. Like, but if you watch an advert that's shot here in South Africa, you can tell that this
they
is
want
not,
speedboats, it, sky rises. Like, okay, that's not really.
That's not really how. No, like, where's the Hudson?
Yeah, you know what I mean. When you you try to do things, when you're trying to make Joburg look like New York City, yeah, you're probably going to fail.
Okay, you can't say that. That's not right. That's not right, Kev. It's not right. And I'm...
But I was just going to say, I think Shukri like really hit it on the head where Create Movement and the campaign that like we've kind of pioneered, it's also something that's not just ours. We've stepped out and we've said, like, this is not just a Fort initiative or campaign or whatever. Like, everyone can take ownership of it and, like, stand behind the movement. And it is just the first step at this stage. It's, you know, starting the conversation around and bringing attention to, because, like Shukri said, a lot of people that we've chatted to, they're not even aware of it at this stage.
Yeah.
So I think even just, you know, getting that general awareness out there, that is the first step in making the shift and the change.
On that point, do you want to maybe lay out the strategy and what Create Movement, what the campaign? Because Create Movement is a campaign, right?
Yes.
How is the campaign going to roll out? What are you looking at? Is it a Twitter thing? Is it going to go from online to offline, offline to online?
So essentially, so it launched on the 2nd of Feb. So we had a really big event. We had about like 800 people.
Oh, nice.
And what we also did, we did something quite cool, is we, instead of filming like an event AV, what we did is we said, as thinkers, makers, and creators, and we always say at Fort that we do things differently, that we decided to shoot a campaign video live on the night.
Oh, wow, okay.
And we also released our own song with it. So we co-created a song.
Why we didn't get that song. We would have played it today.
Yeah,
it's a cool song.
It's a very, very
like,
cool
it's very
song.
Much like do what you want to. Like, you know, yeah, we need like to unite. Control. Like, how many more pyramids do we need to build? Like, how much more gold do we need to give before we kind of take it seriously?
I like that. He's the hectic part of the business.
Yeah, I can tell, yeah.
The visionary.
I didn't write the song, man. I didn't write the song.
We will arrest you. You.
So yeah, we filmed this campaign video to go along with the song on the night. It was live. We had three sets it was like a co-creation kind of thing. So that was like the first step, is we brought everyone that was there along with us. We brought them behind the curtain of creativity. And then the invite to the event, as well as at the event, we have these workbooks. Obviously no one else can see it, but you guys. But what we did is we actually asked everyone that was involved to write in the workbook. So there's a section in the front, and it's just about writing down your like words of wisdom, your life lesson, and then to donate this back to us. So everyone brought it back to us, and we will now use these books to donate in our Fort workshops around Africa.
Okay, nice.
So we'll be having, like, let's say I get one of you guys to, or both of you to, write in the book, and we do a workshop like in Kenya, and we would like Skype you in, have you guys co-host it with us. Like, and really, I think that's another thing about
creating. That's no borders.
Yeah,
that's no borders.
Yeah.
And Create Movement is really, and Fort is really passionate about skills development and building this next generation of storytellers.
Because
you can start the conversation and bring attention to what we've just discussed, but then the next step is let's invest in the youth and actually build their skills in the creative economy.
The most important thing that we need as Africans is unity.
Yes.
And the reason why this show came about, No Borders, at the beginning of this year was because we said to ourselves, Africans don't know anything about other Africans.
No, at all.
And we asked a very simple question. I always repeat this, that we asked, who's the president of Namibia? I didn't even go to Morocco. I said, who's the president of Namibia? And we had like six different nationalities here. And like,
Uncle Sam was, right?
Uncle Sam was, yeah. But I mean, it's very sad to know that we know very little about our fellow African brothers, especially people from the South. I think we're the most ignorant and arrogant individuals on the continent.
Agreed, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, it's beautiful. So,
Is it really?
No, okay. I'm saying this. The initiative is beautiful. That came out kind of wrong, didn't it? Radio's a trip, man. Radio's a trip.
No, and I think a big part of that, we didn't sort of, we've done work in over 17 African countries. And what we find is when we say, hey, we're from South Africa, people are like, gloves up, you know, like, and they like to see you fail in other African countries often, but because we're arrogant about it, because there's this kind of you know, this very arrogant, patronizing approach to it. So we've tried to change that in our interactions, and I think that part of that is to build this independently African-owned network is part of that. To say, you know, let's be united by the really cool shit we do together.
Yeah.
What you guys are doing now could be very valuable in about 10 years. Extremely valuable.
Not even 10 years, in 2 years, because indirectly they're tackling xenophobia.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, the minute you start bringing Africans together, it's not, oh my God, that's a quitter walking down this. No, that's my brother, but you know, he's from Uganda. Yo, what's up? How's, what's his name?
Kambala.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's and we fail to realize everything. We think everything is political.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, politics, you'd know, Shukri, that politics is ambiguous. Everything that we do on a day-to-day basis filters into politics or is governed by politics.
Or has a political connotation.
So xenophobia isn't something that's going to end from the top. It's got to start killing it at the bottom. When especially with media right now, digital media, all forms of media, working with media to push these agendas and raise this awareness, I mean, you can't go wrong.
No, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, you were saying about how we need to like unite as Africa, and that was actually something that was a specific objective of our campaign video. So it launched on MTV Base like the following week, and we kind of said it's the actual video itself and the song is you are able to step behind it and it wants to unite Africa and like stand behind the movement together, mm-hmm. and like push it out into the
exactly.
world as a, you know, like a look what we can do and look how we can unite a country to come together.
And also just marketing of the continent. Do you know there's still people who think that we live in huts?
Yeah.
Swear to God, there's still people who are on this earth right now who've got radio and everything and televisions and everything. They still think that we live in huts.
No, but we do live in huts.
But this is, you know, without trying to like artificially elevate when we talk about the creative economy, yeah. right, is that we know the world's economy has shifted away from commodities and things like that mm-hmm. to a knowledge-based or information-based mm-hmm. or
ideas-based.
Fourth industrial revolution, whatever you want to call it, right? And the point is, we're in this maker knowledge-based, and so we, as the creative economy, need to tell that story
mm-hmm.
because exactly that, we are able to change that perception.
Exactly.
We don't suffer from a lack of great stories. We mm-hmm. don't suffer from a lack of great products and services.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to take it and tell it to people better.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
What's up?
Yeah. It's probably the best spokesperson they can have. Like you've convinced me. You
know? He's probably fired
that's
all his other spokespeople.
Yeah, I swear. I'm on the podcast. Okay, I'm on the look.
We're here believing. Like, yes.
So I'm like,
we're with you, Shukri. Whatever you want us to do. What do you want us to do right now?
I'm looking for everything.
We'll do it. Do you want us to go to State House? Let's go to State House, Shukri. And what else does Fort do? Like a roundup of services and where can people find you, social media, yada, yada.
Yeah, so I mean, I think to really bring it back home a little bit, I think, you know, you were saying this is going to be so relevant in 10 years. You're saying this is relevant now.
Yeah.
I'm saying, yeah, but we're only as good as the work we do on a day-to-day basis. 100%. So we laid down this marker and we said, we want to be black-owned, African-owned, and be this global network and go to the rest of the world. But now we actually have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge for us, is to go out there. Keller, we've worked with Debange, great, you know, artists and great brands from all over the
country. Yeah, we say this all the time, right? But we never do it, yeah.
Yeah, but we've done it, but now we need to start doing more of it, mm-hmm. and we need to actually show examples and sort of case studies and bring it to people to say, hey, this is how we've taken and this is the story we've told.
Yeah.
And so the hard work really starts now for us, to be brutally honest. This is where the discipline comes in, because it's easy to stand up and shout about
mm-hmm.
it, you know.
Yeah.
We have a horse in the race as well to say, you know, where are you spending your money? Who are you collaborating with? We were like, make it us, because we want to be those guys. We want to be at the intersection of entertainment and branding and advertising and comms and bringing it together and stop thinking about advertising and music and things in silos and bring it all together.
Yeah, so it's integrated, exactly.
It's integrated. So I think for us as Fort, we just want to be an example of this really cool, independent, African, black-owned brand that is inclusive of everything. Because I think that the other thing that I want to say to everybody that's listening as well is that we can't be divisive about these things, right?
Yeah.
Mm. But when we talk about these words like decolonization, if you're a white South African or a white Kenyan or whatever it is, that doesn't preclude you from telling a story about like a part of your population mm-hmm. that you don't understand, because that's what creativity is. You can think about what a 50-year-old man would want, so in the same way you can think about that. So I'm not like militant to the point of not being inclusive around this, because we need to hold on to what we have and move from there. This plane is flying.
Yeah.
We gotta fix it as we go. So that's what we're about. You know, at the end of the day, we want to really do cool stuff and hopefully kind of come up with campaigns that become more and more relevant on a global stage and become a voice for independence within the creative economy. So, nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can see all of that on our website. So it's fort.co, not .com, not .co.za.
That's a thing now, .co.
It's a thing.
It's for the cool kids.
Oh, man, okay.
You see, we're not
she
cool.
just scratched us. She's like, hey.
I've always said we are not cool.
And then our social media across the board, it's at Fort Network.
Yeah,
at
Fort Network.
Okay.
You know, one thing, Michaela, what's his name? Yuma Sekela Brayu is dropping an album on the 14th of April that's actually titled No Borders.
Oh,
So that would work very well with Create Movement and us.
You're getting him in here?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Okay. He's a bit difficult to get a hold of, but yeah.
Maybe he's listening now.
He doesn't like weaves.
Yeah, he doesn't take photos with ladies in weaves. They got to either cover it up or have a bald head.
Yeah. Or wear like a scarf or something. You just got to remind people of that, right?
But I mean, it's become, I'm really happy at the way Africa's progressing right now. Yeah. The conversation has started to unite Africa. Just be careful because they killed Gaddafi.
They killed him.
But I think they can kill one man, but they can't kill a nation. They can't kill all of us. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Pleasure having you, Shukri, Michaela.
Thanks so much, guys.
Awesome, guys. 100%.
No borders, cliffcentral.com. Stay logged in. We'll be back after this short commercial break.
Boom. Are we live? Oh, we are.
Yeah. he was playing into the DJ stuff.
Oh,
the
strings. Yeah. Oh, okay, dope.
We got Akinola James. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, that's the way.
What's going on, family?
I'm doing pretty
You're a persistent
myself.
Brother. Yeah. Nigerians are persistent brothers.
Yeah, we're from Lagos. We
There's no stopping y'all, man.
We hustle hard.
Are you Yoruba by any chance?
Yeah, I be Yoruba go.
That's
like, a Koile.
Correct.
Yoruba. Yes, sir.
Yeah, come on, because you're from everywhere. Now,
yeah,
you
know I mean? My brother. We've been through a lot together.
Yeah. So, Benny hollered at me. He's like, yo, what's up, guys? How are you? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. This dude that I met in, where'd you guys meet? Cape Town?
Yeah, where did Benny meet you? I was doing amphitheater.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's like, yo, this brother is crazy. Heard him playing the guitar live, musician. I'm like, okay, cool, yo, what's up, you know? And you here finally, man. So tell us a bit about, you know, your background as a musician. What genre is it? How'd you start? Yada, yada.
All my life, I've been a musician. I started playing the lap steel guitar when I was about 12. When I was 17, I picked up the conventional guitar.
Okay.
And I've always been a singer all my life because...
Wait, explain the first one. What type of guitar do you start with?
It's a lap steel guitar, the country guitar, the Delta blues guitar.
Is that little round thing? With the...
No, that's when that's you have on your lap.
That's a banjo, man.
I didn't even know that.
If you listen to the vintage kind of country from the Americas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If I can ask, in relation to high life music, which guitar is most prominent in high life music?
High life music, you play the electric guitar, Fender Stratocaster and the rest of it. Yeah.
Okay.
For point, but there is a signature at which you play
exactly.
it with.
I'm a major fan of high life. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yo, you know, this is the first Nigerian artist we've had on the show, right?
Actually, this
the first Nigerian, but the first Nigerian artist we've had on the show.
Is it really?
It's the first Nigerian artist.
We've had Ice on the show, haven't we?
No, we haven't had Ice.
Ice
was way too busy. Wasn't he doing Bush thing?
Didn't we do a podcast with Ice?
Nah.
Wow.
We did it with Camera. Not Ice.
Oh, so Cameron and Ice look alike.
Oh. All right. One for the book.
They spent so much time together, they start looking like a couple.
You see?
They be taking pictures everywhere together.
So my bad, Ice. We had your boyfriend on the show.
So, yeah, you know, one thing I've always wanted to ask Nigerian artists is the feel of your music, the originality, the authenticity.
Yeah.
Where does it come from as a people? Like, tell us about Nigerian music.
I think it actually comes from the struggling.
Thank you. I was about to say.
The Nigerian environment. Yeah. The environment is so poor. When I was learning the guitar when I was 17, I used to be a very big fan. I'm still a very big fan anyway of George Benson.
Okay, nice.
You go on YouTube, you want to download the stuff of George Benson just to practice. Yeah. But it's going to take you about probably 30 minutes to boo for just one 5 minute song, you know?
Wow.
And while you're doing that, and the power is gone again.
Oh, no, but that's like God.
So it's crazy, but we found a way to make it work.
I think I'm a massive fan of Nigerian artists in the sense.
Oh, yeah.
Like the way you just put it out there, like they're probably the hardest working and most consistent artists that we have in Africa.
Yeah.
And it's the hardship. Yeah.
But besides the hard work, it just seems like there's talent.
But you know what I mean? I mean there's 280 million plus now people in
you're
Nigeria.
You're right.
Currently. Mm-hmm. Now imagine just the talent
in Nigeria. Or is it like worldwide?
No, in Nigeria.
There's a lot of y'all brothers.
As you enter, at the airport, like it's Mohammed, what's the name of the airport again?
Mohammed.
What's the name of the airport?
Which one? Lagos or
Mohammed, yes, International Airport. Yeah.
Apparently, as you enter the airport, like as you walk out the doors, it's just like a
wave.
So you can imagine, like, just looking at the individuals that have managed to be picked out, like, you know, via the music or the artwork, whatever the case is. It must be hectic, man. It must be crazy.
How are you finding the industry here? As in, why did you come down here to start off your career here as opposed to, because it seems like for a lot of people it works to start off in Nigeria
with the chairman, yes.
Governors, they're big on their governors.
Okay, I'll do a little explanation. I'm a musician at the same time an artist.
Okay, nice.
In the sense,
what's
that
the difference?
There is a difference.
Let's
a
go.
Musician is somebody that practices.
Yeah.
That is a musician. I'm a session musician. I play in the studio for some other artist. I do session.
Okay.
I do a whole lot of things. I do arrangement.
Okay.
I help people to arrange their music. Mm-hmm. I compose. I do a lot of things. I arrange and I can read music.
Yes.
And all of that. That makes me a musician. And from the other side point of view, making me an artist, I was looking at the fact that...
Stava, what are you, dog?
From the other perspective, I was thinking of doing some kind of music that's different from what the environment was giving me,
yeah,
which is the commercial music.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't really want to do that. I will do it with the commercial artist, but from my own side, I want to come from behind. I want to do folk music, rock and roll,
okay,
jazz, fusion.
Yeah, because you mentioned some other dude on YouTube. I'm like, and Kamal's like, yeah. I'm like, I have no idea who you guys are talking about.
That pattern of sentence. Mm. I know you're trying to ignore it, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, wait.
Did you hear that pattern of sentence? Like, I want to come from behind and I do folk music. So, but that's just me.
How did you even get that, though?
I'm like, what? Like, my mind is in the gutter.
I said I do folk music.
I'm like, did you? Wow.
So it's folk, and whoa, at the end of the day, we want to make it like a fusion.
Yeah.
We got to fuse it with African music. And, you know, it's world music at the end of the day. What makes world music is the fact that you have everything in it.
Mm-hmm.
From the
Yeah, because music is what's it called? Language for all people.
Exactly.
Universal language, yeah.
Exactly. So when the music is going all rock and roll, all jazzy, we just want the word and the lyrics and the content of the message of the old music takes it back to Africa from the language point of view.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. I just had to fix this thing.
No, it's gone. Boom,
man. You've been talking about forking. I'm like, okay, well, ain't nothing happening in the studio, y'all. That was his mic on his guitar.
Wow, don't take me back. That was a very bad place to be.
And it was like an awkward pause. Like, wait, hold up. I'm fixing his mic. Let me just fix his mic. Okay.
Wow.
And so you wouldn't classify yourself as one particular genre. You're like a multi-genre musician and artist.
Because I was a musician before being an artist. I've got a huge background when it comes to music.
Who have you worked with before?
I've worked with Tandiswa Mazwai, Kelly Kumalo.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Lokwa Kanza from Congo. And Zeal. The British Nigerian and a whole lot of them.
Are you still in touch with all these people?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
So don't worry, no one's going to kill you. No one knows your face, right? So tell us, what country do you think makes the best music on the continent?
The country.
The country that makes the best music. Or maybe not, let's not call it the best music because people have different appreciation of different genres and different types of music.
Yeah.
But who do you think is doing best? I know it's between two countries. But anyway, which country do you think is doing the best in terms of releasing music?
Yeah, and consistently releasing good music.
Consistently, I would choose Mali. Those guys are consistent.
Wow,
Mali?
That's
I had like, no idea you were going
to
mention Mali.
I think anybody listening.
Salif Keita.
Go check them out. Fatoumata Diawara, Habib Koité, Salif Keita, all of those people are so consistent.
We watched Salif Keita live. What was that?
2015.
Most amazing performance I've ever seen in my life. He had like all of his whole band was like 23 people.
Yeah.
Had traditional instruments.
Yes.
Yeah, they had a hard time getting at the airport because they wanted serial numbers on them.
They're like,
I made this at home.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
and you just want to listen to the music. You want to know where it's coming from. Nigerian music used to be like that back in the days of Fela Kuti, Soniage. My father played with Ebenezer Obey and all of those people. And it used to be like that until
Wizkid.
The early decades.
Yeah. Wizkid and Bam Bam. Those two words. Bam Bam.
They still have the Afrobeat fusion.
Yeah, but the Afrobeat fusion I think the time with them, the Nigerian artists,
time to time,
is now with the producers.
Yeah.
It's not with the vocalists or the actual people who make the music. The writing is very much like under par now in Nigeria.
Exactly.
Because everyone writes the same thing. Girl, I've got money. I'm going to buy you a car. Then I'm going to get you a house. Then I'm going to sleep with you.
Duo.
And I'll probably do the same thing with the next girl. Mm. Shake your bum bum.
You know?
See, that's my problem.
It's redundant,
that,
yeah.
But then the beat is so good. Like, yeah. Oh my God. Like, you know, like a techno song.
And it's unfortunate, though, because they colonized Afro pop. The minute you hear that sound,
exactly.
Niger, they don't even call it Afro, but it's called Niger. You know what I mean?
It's actually like now on the flyers, so when you put out a flyer, like, oh, we have house hip hop, and guess what? Niger.
You know what I mean? Okay, crazy. I can already do you want to just mention to all the listeners how they can find you, how they could get a hold of you, if you've website, social media, yada, yada, and then play us out?
Yes, of course. Akinwale James is the full name. Akinwale is spelled AKINWALE and James. It's at Akinwale 006.
That's on Twitter?
006 from the guitar. The six strings guitar.
Oh, wow. He's getting all
six strings, nigga.
Now, just tell us what song you're going to play and get into it.
And this song is entitled Ode to Ibadan. Ibadan was assumed to be the largest city in West Africa.
Yes.
And I hope you enjoy it.
Cool.
Ibadan ni wa bi asio. Ibadan ni wa bi asio. Babata wa pelu won lo ni le. Yeye wa pelu won lo ni le ni Ibadan ayele ni Ibadan ni won bi asi omoluyale le oluyale Ibadan omoluyale le oluyale Kilo fijoko kushishi aniyo Kilo jela na heron na moni Ibadan o ni wabi asio Ibadan o ni wabi asio Babata wa belu wan lo ni Yeta wa belu wan lo ni Ayele ni Ibadan ni won bi asi Where we went go Wa gogo 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 Amoluyale le haluyale Ibadan
Akinwale James, golly, man.
Stubble, that's the next
You already feature. Know, man. Yeah, yeah. Hey, Stubble, you got to pay us for whatchamacallit. What do you call it? Like, finder's fee.
Oh, finder's fee, yes.
Yeah, if a song comes out of this, you got to pay us for.
And if that song
fee.
Is a hit, at least 10%.
And Stubble, I know you got money, too. Yeah. up in here with them gold chains and the Nikes. And
I've just walked in, yeah.
DJ Stubble in the building right
you
now.
You already know.
CliffCentral.com, no borders. 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. It's your lunchtime vibe.
You already know, yeah.
Why you hating on me?
We needed the jungle music. We're taking it to the jungle. We're taking it to the jungle. You already know.
I thought we were fired. I thought mom was like...
Gustavo, I think you're the most famous white person from Zimbabwe after Ian Smith.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Is that good or bad?
No, it's good. And you know how we love it? Because then he's got the black wife and those little colored babies and stuff. And Stavo, you got a bit of money. You got to be careful about your daughters, man. Like,
I got no money. We're on radio.
We got no money. We're radio DJs.
No, I can't remember.
Trying to get into Taboo. Like, yo, don't you want me there? I don't know. Come on.
No,
you, fam. Where you say you work at, by the way?
You say you who?
Yeah, we don't know you like that.
How many followers you got?
So I didn't know a lot about Stavo until I was back in Delhi, and this dude called Teach Seremani.
Yeah.
He's from Kwekwe.
Yes.
And he's like, yo.
Schoolmate, in fact.
Sweet. Yeah. So Teach is like, yo, Kes, I'm going to this show. Dude called you. I'm like, DJ Stavo. Like, okay, Stavo. I'm like, Stavo, I expected to see a black dude. A white dude. How did this journey begin? I don't know if people have ever asked you this question. We hate asking the ordinary questions on the show, but Where did this come from? Where did the love for this for the music come from? I hate being using race, yeah, but it is kind of extraordinary,
yeah,
for a Caucasian. Okay. To love this kind of music the way you do,
as Zimbabwean Caucasian,
Caucasian at that. You
should
what I mean?
Be on a farm with shorts and farmer shoes.
Yeah, and farmer shoes, yeah, and those high socks. You know, yeah, what I mean?
The gray ones.
I guess it's just been my upbringing. Yeah. I mean, just to shoot myself in the foot, yeah, I never had really many white friends. Growing up, I had a lot of black friends and school as well. I yeah. clicked with them and everything. Yeah. And then I went off to Walt Disney in Miami.
That's white people shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's white people shit.
That's the only white thing that happened.
That's the only white thing.
I haven't finished yet. Excuse me. But I was on a cultural exchange.
Okay.
You see? Cultural.
Okay.
In your case, it makes a lot of sense.
So, once again, I was representing Zimbabwe. I was the first, we were doing the hospitality at the Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
And then when I came back, I saw a lot in the States. And I was like, whilst we were doing that, my dad was busy extending the hotel because we had a hotel back then. Yeah. And he built a nightclub. And he said, you know what? I'm not in that age group, whatever. You've just come out of school. I want you to run the nightclub.
Yeah.
So I ran the nightclub, and then further on, I think around about 2010, somewhere there,
yeah,
I got heavy into being a promoter.
Yeah.
Started bringing across a lot of DJs into Kwekwe and helping putting Kwekwe on the map as well.
That is ridiculous. Kwekwe of all the places, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, that's where you're from. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, for a product like that to come out of Kwekwe and put Kwekwe on the map, that's amazing.
Great. Yeah, I mean, when we brought, I think it was 2010, I think we brought Waxy.
Yeah.
To Kwekwe, and that was one of the biggest things ever happened in Kwekwe at that time.
I swear.
But then, you know, I just, with me hanging out with all the artists and DJs, you know, I was like, I can do this, you know. And, you know, besides me being a promoter and all that, I was doing DJing on the side.
Yeah.
And there's no better feeling, trust me, than when you play a song and the crowd goes crazy. So that adrenaline just drove me to the next stage, to the next stage. And then 2012, I said, let me jump in the studio. Let's do some beats. Let's do some stuff. And we did, those days it was like Urban Grooves. We called it Urban Grooves. Yeah, music. Yeah.
Take Five. Yeah, all that, and all that stuff.
And, you know, I was like, I didn't know if that was my calling or that. And then I did one song with a guy called John Falsetto. He's now in the UK, based in the UK. And I think that was my first house track that I ever produced.
Oh, nice.
It was called Take Me There.
Okay.
And then house just came into me. And I can go and play house forever. You know, it just grew on me and grew on me. And then the collaborations just came up, and we just went deeper into it, and that's where I am up to today.
100%. I mean, your most recent work that's been publicized with Ja Praiser, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's funny. I want to tell you a story. I was having the same story with Phil. Mm-hmm. Phil, I'm gonna call you out because
Phil Chard.
Yeah, Phil Chard. You know Phil Chard, right?
No. African hip hop blog.
Yeah, African hip hop. So he's a blogger, music blogger.
Oh, okay.
So he was questioning the number of likes on your YouTube.
Okay.
So he says, well, this video's only been out for a couple of
weeks. Oh, yeah. There was a thing like, yo, well, how do these numbers jump like
how
this?
How do they jump to a million?
Blah, blah, yeah. Yeah.
So I try to ask myself, okay, fine. The next time I see Stavo, I'm going to ask him, Stavo, how does that happen? And when things like that happen to you, or when you hear stuff like that, how do you receive it as a person who's putting a lot of effort into your work to get things done?
I just tell him it's $1.99.
It's that simple.
No, I'm playing. You know what? My video that I really pushed, which features Mapurisa.
I've seen that as well. Yeah.
We put a lot into it.
Yeah.
And with my team behind me and everything, that was my first actual radio tour that I did.
That you did,
In South Africa.
Yeah.
And I think we spent, how many, 3 weeks? About 3 weeks pushing the track and getting it playlisted and everything. And people that know what the routine is in South Africa, getting it playlisted.
Yeah, plugins. Yeah,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
So, and And obviously on all social medias, I've been pushing it quite a lot and all that. And my goal was to get 1 million views. I haven't been pushing it that much because I went on to the next project. And then that just blew up as well. So like now I've relaxed on those projects. I'm now concentrating on my brand new track. So, you know, I'm just trying to find new ways of spreading my brand.
100%.
And my brand that I've been doing is I'm trying to cross the borders.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's why you're on No Borders.
Yeah, that's why you're on No Borders.
I mean, I remember we booked you out at Taboo with Buffalo Soldier.
Yes.
For the Zim Independence.
Yeah.
And that was my first interaction with you, obviously, and my first understanding of your sound. I honestly believe that this guy is like a myth.
I was. and that
honestly, like,
because
Buff was like, I know Tabuka Stavo. Like,
but I mean, it's crazy. The first time I saw a video was with the short chick. What's her name? It's short chick.
Fiesta Black.
Nah. Then you had the G Wagons. It was dark. Short. Come on, man.
G Wagons short chick.
Yeah, G Wagons short South African chick.
Fiesta Black.
Nah, dog. It's another girl. Like,
you sure it wasn't Fiesta Black?
Okay, maybe.
Maybe it's just
was
the
it
name.
Fiesta Black.
Take a Famba. Where I had the Range Rover.
Was it like in studio, like just black background?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was Fiesta Black. I'm like, wait, that's that dude, DJ Staffel, man. Like, it's unfortunately for Zimbabweans, it's very rare for you to see a Zimbabwean, especially back then, see a Zimbabwean music video on Channel O, MTV, and Trace.
Yeah.
That played a lot. And the question I just wanted to ask was, how has it been? I think you're one of the only artists who's been able to actually cross the borders and get your music on international platforms.
Yeah.
And why you? Why not everybody else? Like, what's Stavo done differently from... There's some people who make some amazing music back home.
Yeah,
Amara Brown, Ken Diamond, Amara Brown. Amara Brown is amazing. But it's taken... They're still not there.
Amara's not just amazing. She's everything.
I knew I shouldn't have gotten into that.
Have you ever been into, like... I hear, like, if... Well, I've been in a position at the moment where, like, if someone keeps nagging you, you end up giving in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, very true.
And I've been very persistent in what I want to do and my goals and everything.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Not a lot of people know, but I've had a few. Well, I had two videos rejected.
Which is possible, yeah. Why not?
So, after spending all that money, they're like, nah.
You know, and I think once I got an understanding was of what's needed,
what they're
looking for and everything.
Trial and error.
That's all it's been. And like you said, you know, a lot of my sponsors are mad at me because they invested in a video and it never got accepted.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's when you're doing these type of things, you know, it's trial and error.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's just a case of I've learned the ropes. I mean, Imtulile with Trademark, that was my first track ever to feature on MTV Bass.
Yeah.
And look how long it took me. I mean, I had Ngoma, I had Teka Famba, I had Mnandi, you know, and it's just a case of like, and people are like, no, you can't get on to MTV Bass.
Wow.
And I'm like, it's impossible. The same thing as Trace Urban, they said they can never get on.
Yeah.
And I just like proving people wrong. So
look at me now.
Yeah, look at me now, yeah.
I just, you know, like what you were saying earlier, you know, I let my work talk.
Yeah, 100%.
If people want to talk and say, how's this, how's that, I'm like, you know, I never asked anybody how's. I just did.
So okay, Phil, there goes your answer, my brother.
Yeah, there goes. Yeah, oh, snap. Okay, yeah. Phil, I hope you're listening. Yeah. So, I mean, Palace is here to kick us out. But one last question. I mean, how was it? All of them started doing a lot of songs with urban artists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of them were very disappointing. XQ, you're my brother, that was trash.
Yeah.
when I heard Mwedzi Mchena, you know when you're reluctant to press play because you've always been disappointed, I was like, can one person do a proper song with Tuku?
Yeah.
And someone was listening in when we were playing, I was like, yo, is that Oliver on a house beat?
Yeah.
I think, and Kamu knows when I get lit,
it's you.
Like, hey, I'm like, auxiliary cable, let me put this song.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the best urban songs that, urban collaborations with Tuku that's ever been done. How did that come about? How was it being in the studio with that dude?
that's the biggest song you've ever done for
me. Yeah.
Yeah.
From a musical perspective, not as a listener or whatever the case, from a person who'd be looking in and saying, I would pick that record to be the foremost record that you've ever done.
Hell yeah.
That is the foremost record that you've ever released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean, for me, it was just a dream come true. And when I went to the studio, actually took us like 6 months to do the track.
Whoa. Which is possible.
That's, you see, that's when you know it's a hit.
Yeah, which is very possible. We're still in year number, year one and a half now.
So, but I mean, I just really wanted to take my time and do a crossover. Yeah. And he understood where I came from.
Yeah.
We had a few things that I didn't like. And he's like, you know, I'm going to put it in your hands because you know house.
Yeah.
And then when we finished it up, he was like, okay.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, so we've been trying now for a while to get a video. So
yeah. The video is what we need.
Thing, yeah.
All right. DJ Stubble. No borders on cliffcentral.com. Stubble, do you just want to tell people how to get you on social media?
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, DJ Stavo, and then on Twitter is DJ_Stavo.
Appreciate having you on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Everybody, have a good weekend. Take care of yourselves. Drink a lot, and please.
Signing out with Oliver Mtukudzi, DJ Stavo, Mwedzimchena.
Let's go.
No borders. Cliffcentral.com.